All right, so we are back. As I said, we are on Hey Ahmed Aleph, that's 5A. We're about halfway down the page. The beginning of the line is the word Bishlama. Bishlama. It's sort of across from the Tosfos that has the big word Lemiyute, and it's sort of across from that line. So as I said, beginning of the first word on the line is Bishlama, and that's what we are starting from. Everyone with me? Okay, great. So Bishlama, so we have been talking, just as a brief, quick reminder, we have spent some time over the course of Daf Dalad going through the expanded list of head categories. So our Mishnah had four, then we raised that number to 13, then we went to 24, and we've sort of gone through, spent time figuring out why you have these expanded lists, what was included, what was not included, what were all the different parts of it, and now we've really come to the end of that, actually. So we sort of just finished off with going through the details of the list. Now we're going to begin to talk about what's not on the list, right? Why we even the most expanded list seems to be limiting something. So that's the first question that we're going to deal with, that the Gemara wants to ask. So Bishlama, the Gemara says, I understand, it's all well. Latana didan, according to our Tana. So our Tana is the Tana of our Mishnah, who had four of us, who had these four head categories. That makes sense to us. Why Tana Minyana? Why he had a number? Because when you say there are four, it means you're limiting it to four and nothing else. So he says, clarifies the Gemara, Lemiyute de Rav Oshia, specifically to exclude the number 13, which is the number that Rav Oshia had. So he wanted to specifically limit his list to four, and we said the reason for that was to avoid talking about Knas, right? Or am I confusing myself with Rav Chia? So the reason why we didn't have those ones was, oh no, sorry. So I am confusing myself with the Bukhiyah. The reason why our Tana had four as opposed to 13 was talking about Nizkei Momon as opposed to Nizkei Gufa. He was limiting it to talking about animal damages as opposed to damages by the person themselves. That's why we had the more limited list in our Mishnah. Then continues the Gemara. Rav Oshia. Tana Minyana, and he also teaches a number. He says 13, Lemiyute de Rav Chia, to exclude the number 24 that Rav Chia has. Ella, but Minyana de Rav Chia, the number of Rav Chia, why does Rav Chia have the number 24, right? Lemiyute mai, what is it coming to exclude? What are you limiting yourself to? What is Rav Chia saying? Only 24 and nothing more. It sounds like this is the most exhaustive list that we have. There's nothing else. There is nothing else that we would have included as a head category of damage. So the Gemara then goes on to say, or the response of the Gemara is Lemiyute Moser Umefagel. And this is where we left off. We briefly mentioned it last time, but I think we're going to spend a little bit more time just understanding these two cases. Lemiyute Moser Umefagel. So these are the two cases which Rav Chia, specifically is excluding. Obviously, our Tana and Rav Oshia are also excluding them. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not liable for them. Okay, it doesn't mean that you're not liable for them. It doesn't mean that you're not required to pay. But they're not included in the list. The list is there specifically as head categories. What does it make a difference whether it's a head category or not? So that we'll have to figure out. That's going to be the later question of the Gemara. Okay, but what's the difference between all of these? Whether you make it onto the list or you don't make it onto the list, does that really make any difference at all? But that's not where we're up to. At the moment, all we're saying is that Moser and Mefagel are specifically being excluded from the list. So why are they being excluded from the list? So first, let's talk about what Moser and Mefagel are. So Moser is basically somebody who tells the authorities about another Jew, specifically in financial matters. Let's see if there's a good rushy on this. Moser. Yes, okay. So Rashi is about, I would say, about 10 lines from the end of the skinny part of the Rashi. So the sort of thinnest part of the Rashi. And he is 11 lines from the bottom of the thinnest part of the Rashi. So that's on the right side of the page. And he says, Moser, Moser means what? Malshin, she Moser, Mamon, Chavero, Le'ovid, Kochoven, somebody who passes over, who gives over the money of their friend, right, of somebody they know, Le'ovid, Kochoven, to the non-Jewish authority. Now, we clarified last time, I think we mentioned last time, and worth clarifying again, that this is not talking about, let's say, for instance, reporting tax problems or tax issues like that, because taxes, or at least modern taxes, are more a form of payment, which is required. That's a slightly different thing. It's really talking about a scenario, a case, which we don't have as much anymore, at least not in Western society, we don't have these sorts of things, where we're talking about a tax that's levied just for the sake, just to make the local baron rich, or, you know, or whoever it is, just to line their pockets. And in that sense, you know, there's no reason to try and, you know, tell on everybody you know, to try and encourage. If somebody's successfully not necessarily paying that, then that's fine, you know, then that would be okay. And therefore, to deliberately hand someone in, to deliberately hand over their money would be considered a form of damages. As I said, nowadays they're required to pay that. That's a very, very different sort of scenario. And therefore, in practical terms, we wouldn't apply this case of Moser. But in principle, that is the case it's referring to, and that is the first thing that Rabbi Chiya is excluding from his list. So it is considered damages, but it's not included in the list. Why that is, we'll explain in a moment. Mefagel is the other one. So Mefagel is a totally different realm, a realm that we don't often talk about, which is in the realm of sacrifices. And Mefagel is basically as follows. So let's see. So let's actually go into the Rashi again. So Rashi is now, the Rashi is 10 lines up. So this is the next Rashi down. So Rashi has this very specific case, but there are actually other scenarios, other types of cases that you could come up with. The Rashi says as follows. Everyone with me in the Rashi? It's sort of it's right near the two dots. If you go to the two dots in the Gemara, which are about seven lines from the end, and then to the right of that, so it's Umefagel, Rashi. Umefagel should be bold, the word, hopefully. That's the start. And he explains what this Mefagel is. It's really, Mefagel is the person who does it. We refer to what happened as Pigel. Kohen sheshochat karbono shel Yisrael. So now you have the scenario where I bring my animal to the temple. I bring the live animal to the temple. I want it to be offered up. And the Kohen is the one who's going to do the actual shechita. But I tell him that I would like this. I am bringing this as a karbon chatas. I'm bringing this as a sin offering. I've done something wrong. Done something which requires me to bring a karbon chatas. Let's say, for instance, a person broke Shabbos accidentally. Right, so that's a classic example. So if a person broke Shabbos accidentally, so you bring a sin offering, and so you bring the animal to the temple. The Kohen's going to now shech this animal on your behalf. And what the Kohen did was as follows: he messed up. So the Kohen sheshochet karbono shel Yisrael chatos l'shum shlomim. He did it as a shlomim. He did it as a peace offering instead of as a sin offering. Now, what is this? I love this area because it's the one that was so foreign to us, but you know, it gives us hopefully a little bit of insight. Is the first thing to note is that the whole thing here is very reliant on the honesty of a Kohen. So it's that at least is something which we can sort of pray to return to, hopefully, to a scenario where you have people who say to you that they tell you, actually, oops, I made a mistake, you know, and I feel bad about it. But the reality is that the Kohen had the wrong thing in mind when they did it. There's no way you can tell. There's no, you look at the animal, you can't tell. You look at the Kohen, you can't tell. There's no way to actually pinpoint a difference in the two. But he says that's what he's done. So he says that he's done it as a shlomim instead of a chatos. De'ein hakarbon ole lechovas ba'alav v'tzarech acher. So it's very nice. It counts as a shlomim. Very nice that you can use it for something else. But I still am now required. It doesn't work for what I brought it for. I needed to bring. I was required to bring this karbon chatas, this sin offering. And now I still have to bring one. So you've taken my animal. The animal's gone. And now I need to bring another one. So that's a form of damage that the Kohen has caused. Again, by his own admission. And that's basically the other type of scenario. So we now have Moser and we have Mefagel. Moser, where somebody hands over someone to the authorities. And specifically in financial terms. And and mefagel, where the Kohen has shechted the animal for the wrong reason and has caused the problem as a result of that. Now that's actually there's a big discussion which we're not going to get into as to whether that's the simplest scenario that you could have gone with. The other more classic cases of higul of korbanos going wrong are where you think about doing it for, let's say, for the wrong time frame. So the Kohen hasn't.
Sorry to interrupt. Is anyone else having the voice problem, sound problem? It's just me.
No, I just had to reboot. I had to re-enter again.
Okay. So is it better now that you've re-entered? Okay. Sorry, and that hopefully it'll
better now anyway.
Hopefully it's okay. If there is a continued problem, please do let me know. So in terms of higul, so the other example would be that the Kohen has in mind, let's say, the wrong time frame. So with each sacrifice, there is a time frame within which you can eat it. So let's say, for example, many times it would be the day in the following evening. So let's say you shecht something today, so you have until the end of today and through the night until tomorrow morning. And let's say you have in mind that they say, you know, the Kohen has in mind they're actually going to eat it tomorrow. So mistakenly, they have in mind they're going to eat it tomorrow. So that, again, would be considered to be some form of nezek, would be considered a pigul. The animal would be no good and as that particular sacrifice. And therefore, that's another example of pigul. Big discussion as to why Rashi chose this example as opposed to that example, but we're going to leave that aside for now and just stick with our standard cases of Moser and Mefagel. And now we seem to have a complete, you know, we've sorted that out at least, or we're going to have to go through the details of why, but in principle we understand. Our Mishnah has a list of four because it is excluding things which are done by human beings. It's only, and that list is only talking about damages done by a person's property, by a person's animal, by a person's property. And then the more expanded list of 13 is talking about what we call keren payments, which is sort of the core payment, the principal payment, as opposed to a knas, which is the fine, the additional fine. Then the expanded list of 24 is excluding moser and mefagel. Why is it excluding those? So that's what the Gemara wants to ask. So now we're back in the Gemara, again, just below halfway down. So the last word on the line now is Bishlamo, right? Last word on the line is Bishlamo, and we're one word before that. So the Gemara asks, Velisne, teach them. Why are you excluding those? Why are you excluding these two cases? So the Gemara responds, Bishlamo mefagel. I understand why we're excluding the case of the pigul, of this animal that's mistaken, brought up offered up in the wrong way. Because the kodshim lo kamairi, when you get into the realm of kodshim, we're talking about the realm of sacrifices, that's already a whole different scenario, a whole different ball game, very, very different from the realm of damages. Yes, it may include some sort of damages, but that's not to be included in the list of Baba Kama. It's too far removed, that sort of damage. And therefore, that would be a separate area. So it says, Lokamari, I understand why it's excluded. Elo Moser, my timer, Lotoni. But what about a Moser? Moser, right, we're talking about finances. That should be classic Boa Kama. You have caused me financial damage. So that should be very much included. So the Gemara, my timer, Lotoni. So the Gemara responds, Shiny Moser, different. Moser is a different sort of case. Why? De Diburo. Because it's only done with words. Uva dibura lo komairi, and our list doesn't include anything that is damages based on words. Now, bells start to ring, because there's actually quite a few things in our lists which are damages based on words, not just based on actions, but they seem to be based on words as well. So we're going to go through now a few of those. Okay, so what about v'har motzi shemra de diburah? So let's start with the first one. So the Gemara wants to know, we included on our list the case of motzi shemra. Motzi shemra is the case where we said about a person who gets married, they're promised a certain, the dowry or the sort of the financial arrangements for the marriage are based on certain expectations of the lady they are marrying, right? And then they discover that that's not the case, or at least, sorry, they claim that that's not the case. The point of Motzi Shemra is basically they marry this woman, and they say to you that our financial arrangements for this marriage was based on a certain understanding, and actually that's not the case. And they're proven to be lying, making it up. Then that's called Motzi Shemra. They have tried to claim back damages. And worse than that, they have caused damage to a person. Again, as we've said in the past, this is leaving aside the emotional damage and all those sorts of things, which is a different type of payment. But specifically, there is a specific fine with regards to the Motzi Shemra aspect of it. And that seems to be very much linked to only based on words. It's based on a claim, based on a fraudulent claim that this person is trying to submit. So that is very much based on words and not on actions. So the Gemara responds, no, it's Dibura Hibakatani. So no, Dibura de Isbe Maisa. It is words, but it also has to have an action that goes with it. There has to be the marriage, there has to be the union of the husband and wife specifically in order for this scenario to take place. And since there has to be that union, then that is considered to be not just word based, but there is something more than that. In order to, as it were, damage this to cause this damage, you have to have the action that goes along with it, and therefore that's enough to include it in the list. Now, again, that's something which you could spend time on. We don't want to get into the details now, but in general, when we talk about many, many areas of halacha where we actually distinguish between things which are active and things which perhaps are passive, and then words come somewhere in the middle. So sometimes they lean slightly more towards action, sometimes they lean slightly more towards passive. It comes up in the realm of punishments. There's a concept of what we call a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh, a commandment we're commanded not to do, which has no action to it, right? Has no action to it. So there's a big debate as to whether words are actions or not in that sort of scenario. So all of that will sort of touch upon this, and you could really spend a lot of time trying to figure that out. But in principle, what Al Gemara seems to establish very clearly is that at least in the Nezikin terms, at least in damages terms, this is considered, this Motzi Shemra case is considered to have enough of an action element to it that it would be included on the list, whereas Moser does not have an action to it, is just purely based on words, and therefore is excluded from the list. So that's number one. Then we move on to the Hot Edim Zomerim. We also have the case of Edim Zomerim. Now Edim Zomerim, as a reminder, is this case of the witnesses who are who basically try and who make up a story to exact money from somebody else, and they're proven to be false witnesses before that has been enacted, before anything has actually happened. So again, the fact that they're witness statements, again, is based purely on words, So the damage that they have caused, or the damage that they hope to cause, is purely based on words. So the Gemara wants to know, why is that included on the list? So there, the Gemara has a very interesting answer, which we've had a similar sort of thing in a couple of different cases. And the Gemara says, V'ha idim zomin, let's just finish the question, sorry. V'ha idim zomin, these witnesses, conspiring witnesses who try to prove falsely that somebody owes money or cause damage in those terms, zibura de les bemaisahu, that is words without any action. They are making a witness statement. That is a statement. Those are words. No action seems to be involved, and yet we include that type of damage on our list. V'katani, right? It's included on our list. So the Gemara responds, Hassam, in that case, the case of Edim Zomim, these conspiring witnesses, Af al gav de les bemaisa, it's true that it doesn't have an action, but even though it has no action associated with it, Rachmana Torie Maisa. Rachmana is a phrase that basically refers to the Torah or the verses. Verses themselves call it an action. Torie Maisa, they refer to it, like Likra, they refer to it as an action. Dichsiv, as it says, this is the quote, Va'asisem lo ka'asher zomam la'asos la'ochiv. You should do to the conspiring witnesses as they hope to do to their brother, to somebody else. So we see the Torah itself refers to it as an action. La'asot, la'asot is to actually do something. So even though it's words, since the Torah refers to it as an action, it almost elevates its status. This reminded me of something similar which we had when we spoke about Bur. We spoke about Bur being, Bur was the pit, was a specific type of damage, right? Damage is done, let's say I dig a pit in public and somebody falls into that pit, I dig a pothole, somebody falls into that pothole, so I'm liable for the damage that's caused. And that was a problem because we've said that you have to own something. All of the other types of nezikin, all the other types of damages that we talked about in our Mishnah, we said require you to be the owner, require them to be birushusei. They require you to be in your within your purview, right? They're part of your property. You own them. And this clearly you don't own. You don't own a pothole in the middle of the street. You've simply put something there. So the Gemara's response to that was, yes, but the Torah, there are a couple of things which do not belong to you, and the Torah elevates them. They sort of bring them into the state of as though they belong to you. And the Gemara gave two examples of that. One is Bor B'Rishus HaRabim, this pit in the middle of the street, and the other one is Chometz on Pesach, right? Chometz on Pesach, that you disavow ownership for it, but if it's in your property, then the Torah makes it as though it still belongs to you, and that would still be a problem. So to me, that was reminiscent of that, right? But in this case, it's true. There's no action at all. Everyone agrees no action, purely based on words. Yet because the Torah refers to it as an action, so that sort of elevates it to the status of some sort of action. And therefore, we're including the conspiring witnesses on the list, but Moser is not included on the list. Okay, any questions? We'll take a quick pause there.
Why is it that if you've got conspiring witnesses, if the action is that they've conspired, and the fact the words will lead to an action to the detriment of the subject of those words, why would it not have been included? Was there any doubt?
As I said, I think the question of this Gemara here is not about whether they're liable. The question here is whether they should be included on Rukhiya's list or not. So we're saying specifically this list is only including actions and not things which are...
Why is not words automatically an action? The power of words obviously has an active...
So as I said, I think when it comes to... There are all sorts of areas halacha where we can speak about what the whether words are considered actions. I think according to... There's no question that from a logical perspective, there is a difference between the two. So whether it falls... There are some things which have... action, some things which have no action, and words fall a little bit in the middle, so in some ways they lean towards action, in other ways they don't. But that's, as I said, is sort of in each scenario there are many ways in which the Gemara sort of and later authorities also sort of tilt words to be in one direction as opposed to the other. In this particular case, it's a little bit of both really, because in one sense we're saying that Dibur is enough. It's enough of an action to make you liable, right? There's no question. It's enough of an action to make you liable. But when we're talking about Rukhiya's list, so he's specifically excluding it because again, it seems to be somewhat different to the rest. So yeah, I think the words still are going to be somewhat different, but they definitely are considered to be enough to be liable. I'm trying to think of a scenario where you literally just... We'll write this down for our homework afterwards. If I hit somebody, then obviously we would say that that you're liable for that damage. Right, so if I hit somebody, I'm definitely liable for that damage, and not only am I liable for the physical damage, but as we've said, ripui, sheves, tsar, boshes, we're talking about even boshes, the embarrassment that's caused. There's definitely an emotional element there to those sorts of things. So I'm wondering what's the case if a person, let's say, verbally assaults someone, and what sort of damages that would carry with it. I'm wondering if there's a clear Gemara. I have to look around, see if we can find an...
For me here, the important thing is that there is an active conspiracy. Whereas if, let's say, for example, I defame someone, but it's just me bad-mouthing an individual, then you can say that's words without actions. It still may have consequences, but it's not physically getting together with other people with the purpose of putting the target of that conspiracy into a bad position.
Right.
That's what's causing me confusion. There quite clearly is an action. There's an action. There's a concert party between people. There's more than one person uttering words. There's a definite campaign, as I say, a concerted action going on here. There's a concert party which intends to cause harm.
You mean that's the conspiracy, you mean? Yeah. And adds to it.
Yeah.
And in this case, there's definitely a conspiracy element. But it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't seem to go down that route. The Gemara doesn't seem to say that it's because they're joining forces, you know, that's what makes it into, or maybe that's why. Maybe you're explaining why the Torah elevates it to an action. Maybe that's why the Torah refers to it as la'asos, because of the conspiracy, potentially. I don't know, that's an interesting one. Maybe, wonder if anybody suggests that that's the reason why the Torah does that. Not sure. But as I said, in terms of why in this particular case, there we simply rely on the verse that says that this is considered to be a ma'aseh, this is considered to be some sort of action, because that's how it's referred to in the Torah, even though it definitely does revolve purely around words. So now we have...
You could come to the situation where you've got a dimzon and nim, and they, by written agreement, agree to lie.
Right.
Now you have an action. The action is the written agreement.
I would agree with you. But here the point, again, the Gemara is not getting into the specifics of when the conspiring witnesses would or wouldn't be liable and whether that's linked to the action. Everybody agrees on that front. The question is just in terms of including it on the list. And yes, it's true that you could have types of Eidim Zomim that would involve action. But the Gemara is saying that in principle, the concept of the conspiring witnesses is one that seems to revolve around words. And yet, despite that, because it's been elevated to the level of action by the verse, that's why we're including it on the list. But I think that's a very interesting point. That yes, you can have some scenarios in which specifically it would have an action associated. Okay, so that's the end of our list. Bishlam alatana didon. So now we're coming back to a subtly different approach. So now we have this list. We have the list of 24. We understand why we've excluded Moser and Rafagel, but now we want to know what difference does it make, right? Who cares? What's the difference between having this list of avos and these head categories as opposed to anything else? So the Gemara now about 10 lines from the bottom of the page. I think it's 11 lines from the bottom of the page, middle of the line. The word is bishlama. Again, it's a bishlama latana didon. I understand according to our Tana, according to our Mishnah, our original Mishnah, just with the four ovos, we said already, what's the reason why we have this list of ovos? Tana ovos, miklal de'ika told us. Specifically, we had these head categories because of the implication, and we derived from there the fact that they were told us that there are subcategories. So you have head categories, means that there are subcategories, and we went through some of those. So for instance, we spoke about when it came to, let's say, an animal goring, right, is the head category, an animal damaging by charging with its horn. But then we said some of the subcategories would be, for instance, an animal choosing to bite, or an animal choosing to kick, or an animal sort of, you know, intentionally causing damage. Those would be subcategories of Karen. And so we see, so again, we went through each different one, that the fact that we had head categories meant that there were subcategories. So that makes sense according to our Tanna, according to our original Mishnah. Ela lo Rabbi Chiya. But according to Rabbi Chiya, and Rabbi Osha, Rabbi Oshia, Ovos, Michlal de'ika told us, does having head categories imply that there are subcategories as well? Told us, what are they, right? Where are these subcategories? Are we going to go through each of the 24 and find subcategories for each of them? So no, Gemara responds and says, no. Omar Rabbi Avohu, that's not the implication of these. when we have the expanded lists, our Mishnah, yes, started off by referring to them all as heads categories because of the subcategories that flow from them. But the expanded list, that's not the goal here. The expanded list is just to compare them. Omer Rabbi Avahu Kulon Ke'ovos. They are like Ovos. All of them are like head categories. Why? Excuse me. Lashalem Mimetav. Because you have to pay from the best land. We'll come back to what that means. My timer. What's the reason for that? Osya. We learn it from Tachas Nasina Yishalem Kesef. These are four words. There is no verse that has those four words in them, or certainly not in the order, or I don't think at all. But each of those words appears in one of the four, original four. And since it appears in one of the original four, so all of the other head categories are linked by that word, by one of those words, by the word Tachas, or the word Nasina, or the word Yishalim, or the word Kesef. And since we have that linkage, we derive from there that they have to pay from the best land. Now, what does that mean, they have to pay from the best land? So when a person damages, you can pay with money. You can pay with regular money if you'd like. But if you don't have enough money, or you're unable to pay with money, don't want to pay with money, you can pay with land, but you have to pay specifically from the best land. Now, we'll get to a little bit later. I have a feeling it's sort of Daf Tes or so, Zion or Tes, where the Gemara begins to talk about various scenarios of, towards the bottom of Daf Ches, towards the bottom of page 8, where the Gemara talks about the different types of lands that a person has to pay from. And we refer to that in the Gemara terminology as Idis, Ayin Yud, Dalad Yud, Tof. The Torah terminology is Mimetav Ha'aretz, from the best of the land. And they're considered to be, I'm not a farming expert, but the Gemara seems to categorize basically three different levels of land. There are better types of land. So even though it has the same value, you could have, it's the same, for argument's sake, £1,000 worth of land, right? It's the same £1,000 worth of land. Each one is worth £1,000, but the more valuable one seems to be, or the preferred one seems to be the better type of land. And since you are choosing to pay with land, you have to pay with the best type of land if you're falling into the head category, if you're falling into this category of Ovos. And that's why we have the expanded categories. That's why, according to Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia, they expand it beyond just the original four. Our Mishnah just had four. Those would be the ones that require you to pay from the best land if you choose to pay with land. And Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia would expect you to pay from that land, even for this other much more expansive, or these other much more expansive scenarios, much more expanded scenarios. And that really takes us to the end. We'll go a little bit more, but that's quite a good sort of stopping point, in one sense. Okay, so we basically spent quite a bit of time just on Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Oshia, going through all the different types of scenarios. In some ways, it was a very, in many ways, this is why it was a very, very challenging piece of Gemara, because it really draws from so many different areas. We've had to sort of jump, in a sense, from a logical, usually the Gemara sort of tends to flow and tends to be, can sometimes be quite self-contained. This past Gemara is really drawn from places, you know, right, left, and center, all sorts of other areas where we have to try and gain some sort of background knowledge and figure out exactly what the case is that the Gemara is referring to. But, and we haven't really gone into masses of detail on those fronts, but in principle, what we had was the 4, then the 13, then the 24. We explained why each one why each one sort of didn't have their more expansive list or did have their more expansive list. Finally, we explained that even the most expansive list actually is not, you know, is not everything. You could add more. And then we explained that the basic sort of thrust of all of this is to talk about how, where exactly this payment has to come from. If you're not paying with cash, where exactly does your payment have to come from? Are you required to pay from the best land or not? So So according to our Tana, it's just for the first four. According to Rav Oshia, the 13. According to Rav Chia, all 24 would be required to pay from the best land. Okay, any questions? All right. It's interesting that even with this most expensive, even though the Gemara itself had excluded two more things, Tosas and I think other Rishonim as well even add more categories. They say there are other categories that perhaps could have been included, why they included them, why they didn't include them, all those sorts of things. So again, you could sort of spend a long time going through each and every type of damage. I think my point is just to show that these lists are not about what you're liable for and what you're not liable for. It's more it's more about this final point that's about how much or whether you have to pay specifically this relatively small point of the of paying from the best land. But there are many, 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 many other cases in which a person may or may not be liable and why that would be. But so now we come back to our Mishnah again. Okay, so back to our Mishnah. So now our Mishnah, we're not actually going back to the Mishnah, but the Gemara quotes another line from our Mishnah. Lo hare hashor kahare hamaveh. So after we had gone through the four categories originally in our Mishnah, and we had said, I will actually pop back. I mean, you don't need to turn back, but I'll just remind everybody. So we had our four categories, and then immediately afterwards, the Mishnah then goes on to say, Lo hare asher kahare hamaveh, that each one is dissimilar from the other. And we spent some time early on trying to figure out what was the difference between the two. And the Gemara now wants to know a little bit more on that front. Very, very briefly, the Gemara says as follows. My ka'oma, what exactly is the Gemara teaching us in this case, right? What is it? What is the Mishnah teaching us in this case? What is it trying to get at? So the Gemara responds as follows. Omar of Zvid, Mishmei Derova. So he says as follows. Hachi ka'omar, this is what the Mishnah is trying to teach us. Lichtav Rachmana Chada. It's suggesting, or what's the question basically? Or Gemara wants to know what's the question. Lichtav Rachmana Chada, the Torah should have just written one. And I would have understood the other one from that. So Omar Chada Mechada Leosia. Hoda Omar Chada Mechada Leosia. Now the Gemara responds saying, yeah, okay, in practice, you cannot learn one from the other. Why is that the case? So then we have to go right back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah already really sort of spelled out for us what was the difference between, or for some of them it did. It didn't for the first two, it didn't spell it out. But the later ones, the Mishnah actually spelled out itself why you couldn't learn one from the other. Okay, so there seems to be a sort of a stringent element to Shor, which is not the case in Mav'eh, whatever that was. We said Mav'eh was actually a big debate, right? What exactly that was. We spent time on Mav'eh, whether it was Shane or whether it was Keren. But the bottom line is that you can't learn one from the other. So continues the Gemara as follows. So similar question. The Gemara basically has a very, very similar question. My ka'omar, what exactly is the Mishnah explaining over here? Omar of Msharshe, Nishmei Derova. He says as follows. So now this is a different person, different Tana. Interesting that they have, I hadn't noticed this actually when I looked through it earlier, but it's interesting that we have a different person here that they want. This seems to be a sort of a fundamentally different answer to the previous one, right? Well, to me, it seems like a very similar Gemara. I'd have thought maybe at least it was the same person, but it seems like it's a different person. So sort of each one needs its own explanation. So my ka'omar omar of Masharshe, Mishmei Derova, Hochi ka'omar. This is what the Mishnah was teaching us. Lichta Rachmana Tarte, the Mishnah should have simply said, sorry, the Torah should have simply listed two of us, which ones? Shor and Maveh, right? Because those were the first two that the Mishnah seemed to logically distinguish between them. the Mishnah had said, you can't learn Shor from Mava, you can't learn Mava from Shor. Each one has its own stringency. But now we've got two of them, so maybe take two of them and figure out everything from there. Tesa idach minayhu, right? And learn another one, learn the rest of them from those two. So Hodor, Omar, Chada mitarte laosi. So now again, Gemara gives a similar answer that the Mishnah was responding. Chada mitarte laosi. You cannot learn one from these two. Why? So the Mishnah itself had answered that question. The Mishnah itself had said because one has yesh bo ruach chaim, right? When we're talking about Eish has ruach chaim, whereas the other ones didn't have ruach chaim, and therefore you wouldn't be able to learn one from the other ones. So then the Gemara continues, Omar Rava. Now, Rava wants to know as follows. Kulhu, right? All of them together, all of these head categories that we have, Kishadis Bor Beinaihu. We could have had a scenario, right, where you actually, if you take one and Bor, Let's go back a stage. Just go through our Mishnah very, very briefly from a logical perspective. We basically had four categories in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah said, started with Shor and Maveh. So Shor and Maveh was an animal goring. And to keep it simple, sorry, not Shor, not Shane and Karen. We had the debate was between Shane and Odom. So let's call it Odom for now. So he said Maveh is referring to a person causing damage. So Shor is an animal causing damage, Maveh is a person causing damage, and I understand why there's a distinction between the two when you have to learn both of them. Very good. Says the Gemara, says the Mishnah, fine. Now we bring in Eish, and we add that in, and we say, what about a fire? And the Gemara then responds and says, no, you can't learn Eish because Sheyesh Bohem Ruach Chaim, one has Ruach Chaim. Eish doesn't have Ruach Chaim, doesn't have this living, it's not a living entity in the same way, it doesn't have the choice of where to move or not to move, and therefore you can't include Eish. And then finally we had Bor, and the Mishnah said that Bor seems to be different to the rest of them because it doesn't move anywhere, because it doesn't go anywhere, the rest of them move in order to cause damage. But now the Gemara is asking a very interesting thing, which is, I understand you've taken me through an order, and you've said one from one, and then, you know, each one. But let's just go take the beginning and the end. So let's take any of the other categories, choose one of the other three, and add on Bor, which was the most difficult one to fit in, right? Bor, the pit, was the most difficult one to fit in. So just take that one and one other. Just say that we had, let's say the Torah taught us that that if you dig a pit in a public place, you dig a pit, you're liable, right? And if your animal gores, then you're liable. So now, those are the only two things the Torah taught me. This is what the Gemara wants to know. The only two things the Torah taught me are that you're liable if you dig a pit in a public place, and you're liable if your animal gores. So what about if I light a fire? Am I liable or not? So says the Gemara, you should be able to figure it out, right? It has, it has a different... It has stringencies over one or over the other, but you should be able to sort of plug the gaps from the from Bor or from the other one. And the Mishnah seems to want to, sorry, the Gemara seems to want to say that you should be able to do that with any of them. But as long as you have Bor, as long as you have the pit in public place, in addition to one other, then you should be able to plug that sort of a gap. Okay, you should be able to sort of figure out the rest of them from there. I think it's quite, I'm regretting not having this. Maybe for me it would work quite well with a diagram. Actually, it would work quite well with a diagram. Maybe for next time we'll try and come up with a good diagram of each one, and we'll be able to figure it out from there. But in principle, the Gemara basically wants to know we should be able to take basically the final, the most difficult category, which seems to have been Bor. That's the most difficult category to figure out because you don't own it, and it doesn't go anywhere, and it's not alive, and all those sorts of things that we added into the Mishnah said basically were problematic. And since you don't have any of those, so Burr would sort of plug the gaps with the rest of it.
If a subcategory list is not exhaustive...
Sorry?
If the list of subcategories isn't...
These are not the subcategories. These are the main categories.
No, I'm saying if a list of subcategories is not exhaustive, why would it have not been sufficient just to say, look, here are the heads, these are the primary categories, some which have no spirit and some which do have, and then just leave the discussion on a case by case? Why try and enumerate those if we're actually saying they're illustrative, but they're not exhaustive? Why not just...
We don't list the subcategories.
Well, we've got the 13 and the 24. Those are categories.
Those are head categories.
Well, they've got around it by saying they are head categories, but they were originally being dealt with as subcategories. So we've been through this whole discussion. So why not just say from the outset, you know, these are the type of categorizations that cause damages and which are subject to either a fine or restitution?
I think that is what but we are... Let me understand. So the reason why we have that list is specifically for what they are liable for. I.e., with regard to the payment, we said that the payment has to be from the best land. So that is the only reason, really, so far as I understand it, from the end of Gemara, why we have those extra lists. Because according to those opinions, those are treated as head categories in the sense that they're the expectation of the type of payment is higher than what would be in subcategories. So that's why we Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Yoshia have these more expanded lists. But in terms of the liability, I think the Mishnah is doing that, or the Gemara is doing that. It's just leaving it as these are the principles, and then each individual case will fall into one or another of these sorts of things. I think.
They are specifically at the point at which those other lists are introduced, the 13 and 24, they are specifically referred to as avos.
Yes. In the Gemara.
They are treated as head categories.
Right. And even at the end they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they are considered to be head categories. I mean, it's interesting, again, I haven't seen anyone pick up on this specifically, but it is interesting that at the beginning they're referred to as avos, and at the end of our Gemara previously, they're referred to as ke-avos, like avos, right? So it's almost like they're sort of given this honorary status. So I think that the reason for that is because, as we said earlier, that the Gemara concludes, the Gemara sort of concedes the fact that they don't have subcategories, so they're similar, but they are similar to the head categories in that their payment has to be from the best land, right? So they're similar to the head categories in that the payments have to be from the best land, but they are dissimilar in that not all of them necessarily will have subcategories that flow from them. I mean, we talk about subcategories. Subcategories is maybe not a good phrase either, because subcategories makes it still sound like they're categories. It's not really a subcategory. It's just talking about a scenario, right? Most of it, when we're talking about, let's say, an animal biting, causing damage through biting, that's not a subcategory. That's just, you know, a different scenario in which the animal is liable, and that falls under the heading of, maybe it's heading is a better phrase, falls under the heading of Keren, as opposed to a different sort of heading.
So really what we're saying, well, that's my confusion perhaps, is that there are examples of...
Yeah, you're correct. So maybe, yeah, you're right. Categories is not a good... Maybe subcategories is a poor phrase. Toldos means derivations, literally. That's sort of the... That's what it literally means. So obviously is the heading, and the... And what's underneath is really just, you know, the other scenarios that are included within that heading, right? Within that heading. I'm tempted to leave it here, actually, even though we still have a few minutes left. We've really got another 8 or so minutes, but I think this is a good thing to start on next time. So just to wrap up where we left off, we're not going to go back to the two dots, okay? But we did. We'll start at the top of Hay on the base. But we are going to start from this Omar Rava again, okay? So from this Omar Rava, because the Gemara really here has basically said that it has returned to stage two of the Mishnah. Stage one of the Mishnah was listing the four avos, was listing off the four headings. Stage two of the Mishnah was where the Mishnah began to say, why do we have each of these, right? Why don't we just have one learning from the other? Why don't we have two and then one and all of those sorts of things? And the Gemara explained why. But now Rava has this other question, which is, yes, I understand in the order the Mishnah presents it, why each one builds on the next. I think maybe that's a good way to, we'll start with this again, but just this is the way I see it. You have stage one, two, three, four, five, or let's call it one, two, three, four. So we have stage one, two, three, four. And the way that the Mishnah builds it, stage one is lacking something. So stage two plugs that gap. Then stage three fills in that. And then stage four takes that a step further. But if you just listed for me stage one and stage four, then seemingly you would have everything covered. That's what Rob is basically asking. So I'll have to start again with that next time. He wants to know that surely if you start with the bottom and then add maybe one more in to sort of plug some of the gaps, just to have a little bit of difference between the two. So that should have been enough. So that's what we're, maybe I'll try and draw it out as well, might be helpful. But we'll start with that question of Robert, I think, for next time, if that's okay. In terms of, okay. Any other questions before we conclude?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, lovely. I'm just